Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. Phil Day from Pharmacy 2U has some very scary statistics.
About one in four deaths are caused by a cardiovascular disease in one way or another.
He tells us about a plan to try and bring that number down. Then many people suffer awfully bad back pain and find sitting on the sofa very difficult.
Created a back support that's designed around ergonomics, developed around ergonomics, but designed to look like a normal scatter cushion. So when you use it against your sofa, it just looks like any other piece of your kind of home decor.
Lorna Kennard and Rachel Wall decided to do something about it. So please do join me for a great show. Thank you. Phil Day is the superintendent pharmacist at Pharmacy 2U. We spoke about heart health and ways to improve it for everyone, really. My first question to him, what is the difference between a cardiac arrest and a heart attack?
Do you know, it's a good one, Mike, and there's loads of different terms for similar things. I think colloquially, that you'd use the same, those two terms interchangeably, but the whole landscape is littered with different terms that mean different things. So mainly we talk about heart attacks and we talk about strokes, but of course we also talk about cardiovascular disease, cardiovascular health, cerebrovascular events and so on. And they're all largely terms for the same thing. What we're looking at here is primarily the idea of cardiovascular disease or CVD. And that's a group of other conditions are grouped together, and we tend to group them together under cardiovascular disease because the underlying causes for them tend to be quite similar, and they're often preventable too. So it's a handy term to use CVD or cardiovascular disease to kind of put them all into. So that covers things like coronary heart disease, peripheral artery disease, strokes and aortic disease and so on.
But essentially it's about tubes getting blocked up by gunk.
It's absolutely that, Mike. If we're boiling it down, that's what it is. And of course, the most common type of gunk is cholesterol. And I think, you know, there's a lot of awareness about the idea of cholesterol and having high cholesterol. That's a very common thing for people to understand. Maybe what's less well understood is the idea that, you know, there is a good type of cholesterol as well as the bad type. And that's quite an important distinction.
Yeah, well, let's examine that.
Yeah, well, cholesterol actually is quite useful. It's almost like stress, that, you know, stress in some areas of life can be quite good and motivating, but too much is a bad thing. Cholesterol's a bit like that. It has a role of in the body, and it needs to be transported from one place to another in the body. And it's that transportation that's really the thing that's the problem. So you can get cholesterol from your diet, and the liver also makes it from scratch. The body needs to then transport that cholesterol from one place to another. And it usually does that using proteins. And these proteins kind of latch on to the cholesterol and transport it around. Now, the analogy that I don't think anyone else has thought of, but this is the way my brain works, is that these proteins...
This is a first, okay? At UK Health Radio, we like the firsts. Go ahead.
A world first just for you, Mike. The idea of a taxi, that some of these proteins are a bit like taxis. And some taxis have four passengers in them already. Some of them might have five or six passengers hanging out the window. And those are the bad sorts of cholesterol or LDL cholesterol, as we call it, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. So those are where these proteins that carry the cholesterol are carrying too much. And as they're carrying and taxiing this cholesterol around, some of the cholesterol drops out of the taxi and sticks to the sides of your blood vessels. However, the good type of cholesterol is what we call HDL or high density lipoprotein cholesterol. And that's a taxi that has plenty of space left in it. So as it's transporting the cholesterol around, it's got a little bit of room inside and it can actually mop up some of these extra cholesterol passengers, as it were, as it goes around. So we need more HDL cholesterol and less LDL cholesterol.
It's the LDL that tends to kind of stick to your blood vessels and block them up.
That's the stuff. Yeah.
Okay. All right. How many of us die because of this? How common is this problem?
Well, do you know, it's extremely common, and you know, this is why we're kind of wanting to have this conversation now, because I think it's looking at the NHS priorities of prevention now rather than just waiting until people, you know, become very ill and go to hospital. Prevention is a really key manifesto for the NHS now, and this is a huge one. So numbers wise, Mike, you're looking at about I could express this in many different ways, but about one in four British people will die of a cardiovascular disease of some kind or a death related to it. That's about 170,000 annually. So it's shocking figures. About one in four deaths are caused by a cardiovascular disease in one way or another.
Okay. All right.
Another one in four stat for you is that about one in four British people between 40 and 74 have never had their cholesterol checked. So it's a big problem, and it's one that is...
Hang on, let's rewind. Say that stat again.
Yeah, about one in four of us aged 40 to 74 have never had their cholesterol checked.
Really? That is quite surprising.
Yeah, it's a fairly shocking number, and it's very, very simple. I mean, that's the other reason why we're here, is to talk about the programme we've got to try and make it a bit easier. And you know, technology and digital tools are making that cholesterol checking process a lot easier. The thing with cholesterol, of course, is a bit like blood pressure, which is also another risk factor for all these diseases, is that you don't wake up in the morning and think, wow, my cholesterol feels higher today, or, you know, I'm feeling my blood pressure being a bit on the high side. Generally speaking, you don't feel these things.
No. Well, certainly I have high blood pressure, which I kind of found out about by accident.
Yeah.
So I suspect the cholesterol is pretty similar.
It's very, very similar. So often, if nothing happens and you don't have a proactive check, the way you would find out about it is, as you just said, you'd find out via either a routine check for something else or when there's a problem.
Yeah. All right. So we got a plan. We got a plan to try and do something about it.
Absolutely.
What is the plan?
Well, the high level answer to that is that we need to get more people aware of what's going on inside them. And we do that via, there's an NHS health check at the moment. So the NHS has an existing programme whereby people between 40 and 74 are invited for a free health check, and that will screen you for cholesterol and high blood pressure and various other things. Now, the problem that we've got is, despite having this NHS health check process, only about, I think it's about 40% of people, somewhere between 38 and 44% of people are attending it.
Okay. I was going to say, job done then. Okay, well, let's move on to the next problem. But not everyone goes for the test.
No, not everyone goes. And it's frustrating, but it's kind of understandable, I think, because some of these tests, the NHS is starting to move towards digital versions of this test. But most of them have been conducted within GP practices, so it does require you to then, you know, get out of the house and go to the practice and have an appointment and so on. There might also be issues with accessibility, with maybe some fear about what might happen at the appointment, or even what you're going to find out.
So I mean, most people can get to the doctors for a blood test, can't they?
Yeah,
I would have thought, but that's I guess the stats show otherwise.
Yeah, well, there are issues with accessibility. I mean, we've got one of our patients because we've done a round of these digital tests that we've started doing now. We did a round of them a year or two ago. We found a couple of interesting stories as we did that, and one of them was a patient who lived in a remote island, and it took her sort of 2 or 3 days to get to a GP back again. You know, there were some fairly extreme stories, but there are much less extreme daily stories of accessibility, and it's an issue for a lot of people.
All right, so
there is that issue of that test, but it is there and it is effective.
So that is going to the GP or the nurse at the clinic.
Yeah.
She takes some blood out of you, sends it off to the lab.
Yes.
Job done. But you've got another plan.
Yeah, there's lots of new innovations in healthcare, as I'm sure you're aware. And one of the ones that we're really excited about is this idea of a home test. And we've partnered with a company called PocDoc who make the physical test. So what we've done is we've created what we call a Healthy Heart Programme, which takes this at home test, and I'll describe that a bit more in a moment. But we wrap it around with a package of automated emails over a course of 8 weeks just to nudge people in the right direction with behavioural advice, and also a call with a pharmacist to discuss the results of the test. Because you know, you have home tests already for things like cholesterol, but what will often happen is you get the test results and then you're left with them. And sometimes having a number of 5.4 is it's a number, sure, but it, you know, what is that? What does that mean? What do I do about that? Is that good? Is that bad? So the program that we have is based around this blood test that you can do at home, and it's extremely clever. And this is the thing that we're really excited about. You can do this at home in 10 minutes. So you get a package through your letterbox. It fits through the letterbox. And you have an app that you download onto your smartphone of any flavour, and that will talk you through a little video guide as to what to do with the contents of the box. And put simply, you have a little white, almost like a lateral flow test, if we remember in the COVID days, those little white plastic things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A little bit like that. And you just do a small finger prick, drop of blood onto that, and then you wait 7 minutes. And the reagents and chemicals inside this little white strip of plastic turn the blood drop a different colour. You then use your smartphone to take a photograph of this drop of blood and its new colour. And again, within 7 minutes, it will tell you what your cholesterol levels are. It will give you your heart age, which, as the name suggests, is, you know, if you're 50, do you have a heart age of 45 or 55? What is your effective sort of age of your heart? And also a thing called a Q risk score, which is a fancy way of saying what is your risk of a cardiovascular problem within the next 10 years.
Let's just go back a little bit to the actual test. There's an awful lot of variables there. Mm-hmm. Now, this lateral flow test for COVID, that quite often got the wrong result. What about this thing with all these variables? I can imagine that not going quite as well as you just described.
Well, of course, it's a fairly easy thing to test. And that you can take a person and do this test and then do a standard test. And these devices have been clinically validated as being within all standard ranges for clinical test results. So we're really reassured by this. This isn't a sort of broad brushstroke approximation. You know, these are clinically validated as being meaningful and accurate. So they're really super powerful.
Okay. I think I was getting more at user variability. I mean, that's the issue there, because you're dealing with the great British public, you know, and we're all individuals. We all do things a bit differently. I'm quite sure, even though we've looked at the video and all the rest of it, yeah, there's a good chance we're going to muck it up, isn't there?
Well, it's a good question. It's quite hard to get wrong, but if you do get it wrong, and everyone will get things wrong, you can send off and get another test for free as well. So you can always have another go. You get a couple of blood collection pipettes as well. So if you get it wrong the first go, you can have a second go. But it is very straightforward, and the instructions are very clear. And the main thing.
So if you took the results from this test, yeah, and took it to your GP and say, look, this shows I've got an issue with cholesterol, would he then take the results of that test to be sufficient to go, okay, then, Mr. Dilk, you obviously need to go on this prescription? Or would you then go and do another test?
It's a good question. I think they would probably do their own test as well. I'm not sure. But I would, you know, certainly the tests from this, results from this have been validated as being accurate and within all of the specifications that are required for clinical validation. But we do, if a patient has a result, usually what we would do here is to signpost them to advice to change lifestyle and yeah, factors. But of course, if their risk is very high. So we have a threshold here with this Q risk, which is your risk of a cardiovascular event within the next 10 years. If that's more than 10%, that's the trigger for us to say, right, you need to go to your doctor and talk about this. If it's under 10%, then you can recommend lifestyle measures to turn that ship around.
Okay, so that's the consultation side of things. Let's just chat about that for a moment. You say consultation. Is that someone from pharmacy to you on the other end of a phone, or is it the classic chat pop via an app?
Ah, no, this is one of our highly trained specialist pharmacists on the phone here. So you get a free appointment with one of our pharmacists to discuss not only the test and what the results mean and what these numbers actually mean, but also tailored advice about what to do about it. Because, of course, it will raise many questions. Mm. And some of them are things like, Well, the most common things we get are about you know, how to stop smoking, how to manage weight, how to manage pre-existing conditions, how to get more exercise, and so on. But there are some things a lot of people might be puzzled because there are sometimes fairly obvious lifestyle measures that you can modify, but there are other things that may not be so obvious. So there are sometimes, for example, familial or genetic factors that might mean that you have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease that you might not know about. And that's why these tests are so important, because there are people who do have a high risk of CV but have no idea. And you can't assume that just because you're fit and you don't drink and you don't have diabetes, that you're not at risk. You know, this is, which is why we would urge anybody to get a test, because you just don't know.
All right. And so you've started to distribute these tests through workforces. Tell us a bit about that plan.
Yeah, so we started this a couple of years ago with a still a large but a smaller scale distribution than this, just to test that this wraparound care really worked with the pharmacists involved, and as I say, this 8-week program of advice and support afterwards, and it really worked, and the results were outstanding. So what we decided to do now is extend that to workforces. So we've got 100,000 test kits that we're giving out to UK businesses, and we're starting with Royal Mail. So they've been our partner for 25 years, so it seems only right that we offer this partnership back to them. So we're launching that with them immediately, and any other UK businesses that want to take part in this and have a suite of assistance from us and free tests, then they can get in touch with us.
Okay.
The workplace angle is, you know, the people I think who are in this target range of over 40, but of course anybody could and should take the test, a part of our workforce, and often they're the people who are less likely to have the time and the resources to get out to a GP surgery and take the time off
Yeah.
to have the appointment and so on. So if you have a busy life and you're working, you've got a family and you're looking after everything, then a 10-minute test in the middle of the night, if you want to do it, you know, you can do it whenever you like. It's just a great way of having that reassurance and just you know, doing it quickly and easily.
My first thought was, if you're looking for bang for buck kind of thing, starting with the post office, because I mean, I know there's lots of different people that have different jobs in the post office. They're not all postmen, but a lot of them are, and they do a lot of walking. They tend to be a bit fitter and in slightly better shape than the rest of us. So, I mean, would it have been better starting with a load of bankers or a load of taxi drivers or something like that? Because then, they're probably in worse shape.
Well, Mike, they are all welcome to join us. And we would encourage them to. But you say that, but the person that we've picked as our sort of case study to show the benefit of this is Carl, who's a Royal Mail worker, who again thought he was super fit and was you
He
know,
was a po he actually was a postman,
yeah,
wasn't he? So yeah,
absolutely,
he
and a
did the
keen
walking,
runner,
yeah.
and he was you know, he had a cardiac event at work, and it was the fact that he was at work and was found by his colleagues at work. You know, that meant that he got seen and cared for. But he was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, which is a type of CVD, and you know, he thought he was outside of the main risk groups. And this is the reason why this is so important, is that it's not necessarily the people who are obviously you know, heavy drinkers or obese or smokers.
Smokers and all that sort of thing, yeah. So
Yeah.
have you, ha has the program so far sort of discovered many people with problems you didn't know?
Oh yes, yeah, it has.
Any
We've
stats on that?
got I'm trying to think of the number of people that we had. See if I can find that. Yeah, we had about 22%, I think, was the key thing that we found. About 22% of people who took the test in our first round had one of these Q risk scores that was over 10%. So that's the level at which we would say, right, you need to go to your doctor and
Right.
You know, take further tests and be looked into. So we were discovering about a fifth of people, maybe slightly more than a fifth of people, who you know, had quite a high risk, and they had no idea of.
Yeah. So they are exactly the people that, okay, right, pal, you need to think about this and do something about this. Get some help one way or another.
Yeah, totally. And then we found
Yeah.
also that the heart age piece, about 30% of people had a heart age that was higher than their actual age, No, it's actually 64%, beg your pardon. 30% were their heart age was more than 5 years higher than their actual age, and about 64% of people had a heart age that was higher in any way than their actual age. We found an enormous amount of risk there, and of
I
course.
mean, this is kind of quite disturbing stuff, isn't it, really?
What it is, and it's disturbing when you think that the only time you might actually realize it is maybe 5, 10, 15 years later when something happens and you wish you could reverse and make some changes. And it then boils down to habits, doesn't it? I think this is the thing that, I mean, quite frankly, the way of preventing this and reversing this, the steps that your future self will thank you for, as it were, are not very sexy. It is. More exercise, healthier diet, be mindful of smoking and alcohol. It's all the stuff that we know about. None of this is new. But it's just about the difference between knowing it and internalizing it. You can read something and get a dopamine hit from thinking, oh yes, I understand now that these lifestyle measures will help me in the future. But there's a difference between knowing it in a logical sense and then actually internalizing it and changing habits. And I think what we're trying to do is just to incorporate a suite of support and motivation and that 8 week program of kind of email nudges to try and set a program of habits in motion so that then it becomes part of your identity to kind of
The hardest bit is getting people to change their habits, for sure. So good luck with that. Here's a slightly different question. So you did this with the Royal Mail. You had great success. Does the Royal Mail have health insurance for staff, do you know?
I don't know the answer to that, Mike. They may well do, maybe a question for them, but entirely possible.
I think they do, actually. And there's an awful lot of people that work for the Royal Mail. So I was wondering, is there potential here for a bit of a backfire of some sort? So if they all do your test and then 22% of them find, goodness, I've got a serious issue that I didn't know about. If I was the insurance company, I'd think, hang on a moment, I think we've got some insurance premiums that need to go up fairly significantly.
Well, I think the insurance companies probably realise that this is a massive problem in the population anyway. But also, it's not a problem. I mean, this is the thing about all of this is it's preventing. We're actually preventing things from happening later, so that the workforce is still working as they are. But what we're doing is identifying the fact that maybe in 10 years' time, or 15 or 20 years' time, we're steering you away. We're steering a ship away from a shore that it doesn't need to run aground on.
I mean, it could of course go the other way. The insurance company might think, hang on a moment, they're doing something serious about this. Perhaps their premiums should go down. I don't
Well,
know.
yeah, well, I mean, that's the other angle, of course, is that they might think, well, you're taking steps here such that in 10 years' time, your workforce doesn't, have problems that they could have prevented now. So,
I have to admit, from my dealings with insurance companies, I tend to think probably not. But you never know. So. Really. All right. So like you've had luck with this so far. It's worked well. What's the overall objective of this for Pharmacy to you?
Well, the thing for us, Mike, is we're giving these out to businesses for free, and there's a fairly good reason for that. I mean, we're trying to prove something here. We're first of all trying to show that we're working alongside the NHS. There was an NHS 10-year plan which identified three big shifts in the way the NHS works, and that was to move care from hospitals to home or communities, which is what this is doing, to move from treating disease to preventing it, which is what this is doing, and also to move technology, from analog to digital, and again, that's what this is doing. So that there's a thing here that we're trying to prove the idea of scale. That if you think in the old days, if you had, if you needed to see 100 more patients, you'd need 100 more doctors. You'd need to build an extension on the hospital. But now we've got digital tools, and we can scale things up significantly. So we can help 100,000 people check their heart and cholesterol risk. Without any extra, apart from the pharmacist and the work we already put in, we don't need 100,000 doctors to do that. So there's a scale argument. We can then use that with other types of program and really help the NHS with its ambitions. And for us, we just want to go first, I think. We're pioneers in a lot of different ways. And we just think the pharmacy as a whole has a huge role to play in clinical services in the future. And you might have noticed in high street pharmacies, there's a lot of things now like hypertension case findings. So there are pharmacies doing more blood pressure checks. We're doing this pharmacy first, where we can give prescription medicine for certain minor conditions. There'll be independent prescribing by pharmacists coming along. So we're moving towards a more clinical future for pharmacy. So we're also trying to prove that pharmacy has this clinical role to play. And we're going first. We think there's a real benefit to the population and to pharmacy by this sort of digital first, putting patients in control of their healthcare with tests like this. And we just want to go first and light the blue touch paper.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm on board. Digital health is a wonderful thing. If people can be in control of their health as well via tests like this, etc., I do tend to think that is a very good thing. However, you are giving 100,000 tests away for free. You are a commercial organisation, so you've got a longer term plan. You know, you need to make some money out of this stuff, don't you?
Well, there's obviously a raising awareness of us. You know, it'd be naive to think that we're not just trying to raise awareness of ourselves here, but also.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing, by the way. I'm not knocking commercial enterprises.
No, but there is a piece about going first. I mean, I come back to that point that, you know, we think there may well be a much wider role to play for us and for pharmacy in general in the future to start offering services like this remotely and digitally. And I think we're still at that point here of proving that this works. We had a 10,000 test study that worked very well, so we're now extending that to 100,000 with businesses, and all of this is just building up the evidence base for the idea that you can deliver high quality healthcare, you know, remotely and with patients in full control of it. And then that, I think, is just, that's what we're all about. So effectively, we're just proving that the idea that you can move things towards a sort of scale, digital, patient controlled way. And that's really what our entire business is about. So we're just proving the concept that really patients can be in control with a scalable digital healthcare solution. And we're proving that model out with this.
Very good. If anyone who has a business or works is responsible for the health of their staff, you know, could be potentially quite a lot of staff, and likes the sound of this, mm-hmm. and would like to get involved in the same way that the Royal Mail has,
yeah.
or indeed just an individual is thinking, heart health, I need to do something for myself personally or the rest of my family. Good. What are some good sources, some good information resources that people can get some good solid information and get involved?
Right, well, there's all sorts of stuff. We have on our website a health hub, and there's a link on there for people to get lots of information about heart health in general. And we also offer this test and the supporting program on there for members of the public as well as people in workforces. Any workplace that's listening to this that wants their employees involved, no obligation, as they say, just let us know. Get in touch with us by any means, and we'll get back in touch with you to work it out. There's loads of resources on the NHS website. I'd just be, you know, mindful of recommending too many third party sites, but the nhs.uk site has loads of great information. And of course, you've got the British Heart Foundation website as well, that has a great page on heart health. But the cardiovascular disease page on the NHS website is a really good place to start as well. As
excellent. All right. Is this test free for individuals at the moment? You said there is 100,000 free tests, or is that kind of via companies?
Well, the 100,000 we're ring fencing for workplaces, but any individuals, we also have a program separate to that, which is on the health hub via our website, and we have tests available through that as well. So individuals can also get involved.
Okay. Right. Well, look, thank you. This is important stuff, and this could potentially help a lot of people. So, Phil, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Lorna Kennard and Rachel Wall have developed the sitting well, which helps people sit on the sofa if they are suffering from the agonies of a bad back. And there are an awful lot of them. A lot of people find sitting on the sofa really quite uncomfortable. But before we start, I'd just like to mention the back app chair, which is for people that find sitting at their desk difficult. If that's you, please do have a look at my website, Relaxback UK. You can see some pictures and videos of the back app chair and also arrange to have a free trial. So do have a look at that. Now on to the chat with Lorna and Ken and Rachel. My first question to them was, I got them to really introduce themselves and talk about their clinic.
Okay, yeah, sure. So, well, hello, I'm Rachel. And Lorna and I, we've been working with people with chronic pain and recurring conditions since 2001. So we've acquired an accumulating list of different therapies that we practice. So for myself, I practice the McTominay technique. So that's looking at the whole of the spine. Systematic kinesiology.
Sorry, I missed that. Which technique is that?
McTominay.
Okay.
Yeah. And then systematic kinesiology. And then Lorna and I cross over in that we both practice something called Psyche and also visceral manipulation, which is releasing the tension around internal organs and the impact that they can have on the spine and structure and movement. And then on top of that, root cause therapy as well.
Yeah. What was the last one?
Root cause therapy.
Root cause. Okay. That's nothing to do with teeth.
No.
Yeah.
Tell us what that is.
Well, that can be used again in line with chronic pain or recurring patterns that are happening in life, in that they can come back from an event that's happened and that trauma gets held on that mind-body level and is essentially stays held as a memory in the body. And then the body can adapt around that or create pain in that area. And then so with the root cause therapy, you're getting back to what that original event was and then completing the healing cycle, essentially, in order for mind and body to be able to move forwards.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, that these kind of therapies that you're doing are not really the topic we're going to talk about just now. But certainly if those were the things we were majoring on, I would be asking you about some of the studies that have been done and peer-reviewed papers, if there are any, that sort of thing. But because I think it's fair to say most of these therapies you're using, they're not of that ilk, are they?
They're certainly tend to be lesser known, and it's been an evolution. I mean, myself, there's been a crossover with what Rachel and I do. I also work with something called craniosacral therapy, which more people have heard about. It's been in the UK a lot longer. And scar work, which is again a more recent thing, but looking at the restoring the tissues around old scars or recent scars. But a lot of this stuff, it's a complementary. So less known about, and we tend to, it's been our own evolution through our own work as therapists, seeking to provide a more complete and holistic approach to
health. But the main topic, what we're going to talk about today, is something that everyone will have heard of, essentially sitting on the sofa, relaxing, and potentially sitting on the sofa and watching telly, which for people with bad backs will know that actually might not be all that relaxing. Because sofas aren't really that great to sit on if you suffer from the agonies of a bad back quite often. You kind of stumbled across this or realised that a lot of your customers had real trouble just kind of relaxing on sofas. Is that kind of where what we're going to talk about came from?
It is, because yeah, within our clinical practice, the sofa was either the last place that somebody could sit when they were in pain and having to resort to sitting on the floor or on a dining room chair because it was more comfortable than the sofa, or it was the cause to their pain and their problems. So we were just seeing that just too often in our within our clinic. And so within that, then researching, because there's so much on ergonomics in the workplace, but that doesn't transpose into the home unless it's a specific ergonomic sofa company. And so sofas, they're not supportive, they can be too deep, and they encourage you to be sitting in a way that then is creating pain. And we just thought we need to do something about this. It's not right. So that's how the City Mile back support cushion came about.
Right. So you came across this issue. You decided to, as you said, do something about it. Right. What did you do?
Well, rather hilariously, our first port of call was to design a sofa. And we started working with someone who's from that industry. And when we realized we didn't have a spare $100,000 at the back of our sofa to get to prototype, we thought we need to come up to another solution, which I think actually worked in our favor, because rather than designing a sofa, we ended up designing something that anyone can use on any sofa that they currently have. And so again, reduced that cost, but it was a lot of, I guess, our own research to kind of how do we start this, and ended up working in collaboration with a student at Brunel University, which was our kind of saving grace to bring it to life.
It was, because we started off seeing what we could develop ourselves, and then we got to the point of we now need a product design expert. We enlisted the services of a product design agency to begin with. Mm. And then when they came up with their first ideas, it was just like, this isn't right, not moving forward in the right direction. It was actually through networking and Lorna being in the networking room with somebody from Brunel University who said, we have design students that work with businesses that are looking to bring products to market. And it was then, she said, do you know any companies? And Lorna put her hand up and went, yeah, us.
Excellent. All right. So tell us a bit about this thing that you've created, designed to help people that are scared of their sofa.
Well, it was kind of going, I guess, backwards and listening to what some of the common issues were with clients. So, again, that sofa depth, that having thousands of cushions in and around you to try and create a support and always wiggling and shifting, but also hearing from clients that, yes, they had a back support, but whenever visitors came, they took it off their sofa because they didn't want it to be obvious of this is my special seat for the person that's got the problem. So it was really wanting to create something where no one knew that it was a back support. It was just something that seamlessly fitted into the home. And so in essence, we've created a back support that's designed around ergonomics, developed around ergonomics, but designed to look like a normal scatter cushion. So when you use it against your sofa, it just looks like any other piece of your kind of home decor.
Okay. All right, so it looks like a cushion, but if you were to take it apart, I'm assuming you wouldn't find feathers inside, or you might find things other than feathers. So describe it to us.
So it's Rachel's helpfully
holding it, holding up. Yeah, that's not always great for radio, Rachel, but never mind.
You wouldn't know that's a back support, would you?
No, you wouldn't. No, no. Listeners will have to take my word on that. But
yeah that's it.
Looks just like a pillow.
So basically inside it is a specifically contoured shaped piece of foam. And then in front of that is padding to give that feeling of you least sort of sinking into something. And the two work together to give the support so that it's helping to support the natural curve into the lower back. And then all that's wrapped within kind of the inside of a cushion.
That's it. And that's the bit that within our research was the most difficult, that needed the most evolutions of the product before we came to the final product, because you've got the areas of the spine that need the support the most, but then because you've got the foam and then the feather over the top, and it was how the two interact with each other and how the padding changes the contour to what the profile of the foam was, that took us the longest revisiting and reworking before we then got the perfect balance, so that when the two were combined, it was then supporting the lower back in the best way. Even the density of the foam to be that it's kind of comfortable and supportive. Yeah, it was all of those bits, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds like you put quite a lot of development work into this thing. Yeah. But I'm thinking, and you've mentioned it a couple of times already, a lot of the problem with sitting on the sofa is the fact that a sofa is often quite deep. So when you put your back towards the back of the sofa, you know, your feet don't touch the ground, especially if you're kind of short, if you've got little legs. So I'm quite tall, actually, but I have quite short legs. So I'm a bit of an odd shape. In fact, my wife calls me low bottom because I've got a long body and short legs. So, you know, I might be in that. I am actually in that situation on some sofas. So if you put this thing that you've created, what do you call it, actually, your creation?
The sitting well cushion.
So if you put the sitting well cushion on the back of a sofa, but it's still quite a deep sofa, does that work for you?
It's all down to, like you say, kind of ergonomics. But in essence, sometimes if it's a ridiculously deep sofa, then you might need another cushion behind it.
Right.
But because if you've got the foam support stability within it, it's not like a normal sofa cushion where over time it just squidges and gets softer and softer and vanishes behind you. It's forming that ergonomic shape for you to sit against. So for some people, just having it means that the sofa depth is taken out enough that you can then get, you know, your knees are over the end of the sofa and you get your feet flat, and that's fine. For some people, if it's the sofas look more like a bed, which some of them do, then you might need another cushion behind it. But at least having that one in front kind of gives you a properly ergonomic support to sit against.
And you can also with the sitting well cushion pull it away at the bottom slightly so that it's like, as Lorna said, because it retains its shape. When you have that more of a recline, it's still supporting your back in the right way and relieving pressure in the right way. Mm. So you can also alter the angle of the cushion as well to mean that you're in comfort and supported.
So we've had customers historically say that they've ended up using it because they like to sit up and read in bed. Mm-hmm. And so they've ended up using it in bed in on top of their pillows. Mm. So that they're then turning that almost into like a little micro layout sofa and take the load off.
All right. Mm. So you've had good feedback from people that essentially are suffering, because, you know, there's nothing worse than a bad back. It's, you know, it just makes life awful.
It does, and particularly when it's unnecessary. You know, if you can help, you know, where the sofas are too deep and create that pressure when it doesn't need to be happening, hence the sitting well cushion. But no, what we've been blown away with is, because we've relaunched this cushion because we had a time where we were without a manufacturer. And so we've just recently relaunched after three years without a manufacturer. And what we've been blown away with by the most is that when we've then let people know that the sitting well cushion is available again, there's people that even bought the first cushions even 9 years ago that are still saying, couldn't be without my sitting well cushion. There's one person where they relocated to Shanghai, and like in a comment on social media, they've said one of the first things was making sure that my cushion came out with me. I just love it. people where they can sit on their sofa with their wife again rather than on the floor. And just the amount of people are like, Mike, I'm still using my cushion now. So not only the testimonials of people that when they bought them and how much they've helped, but that still 9 years on, they're still doing the same job. So, yeah, we've been blown away by that.
So not only do they work, but they last well as well, by the sound of it.
That's it, very much. Yeah, we worked that out at the present kind of retail price that works out on the feather version, 4 pence a day. So I don't think that's bad.
that's not bad at all.
No,
if you say that to someone in pain, bite your hand off.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, look, this does sound like it really could help a lot of people, because I do know that a lot of people do find it uncomfortable to sit on the sofa. So if people are listening to this and think, all right, this looks interesting, I would like to check it out. Please tell us where they can see some pictures of it and see how it works, and, you know, even buy it, which I guess is what's your website?
So, yeah, the website is sittingwell.co.uk. So sitting with an S. And then obviously over there, we've got links to Facebook and Instagram and the YouTube video as well, so people can see it in action.
Yeah, lots of photos on the website. So, yeah.
Good. Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, this does sound like a very good thing. So, Lorna and Rachel, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
Thank you for inviting us along. Thank you.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Phil Day from Pharmacy2U talking about heart health, and Lorna Kennard and Rachel Wall talking about the sitting well. And thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.